Hello again, TGP friends and family. It's Monday, August 23rd, 2021. This is In the Know, episode 11. Just a handful of announcements before we jump in to the sermon follow-up. Number one, we have Gentle and Lowly books available for pickup. I would like to give one, not to each family, but to each individual within our church body. And then the agreement is you read it, the family keeps one, and you find someone to give another two. So basically, I've got two for every family if you'd like to have one. It's a wonderful book, and we were donated 100 copies by Crossway, or a donor who paid Crossway for them, but they cost us nothing. So those are available for pickup. I've got those in my office. We also have a joint service with our TGP family, TGP West and Colleen. Lord willing, COVID willing, we're going to have a joint service on September the 12th. I just hit my microphone a second ago. You might have heard that. A joint service September 12th. We're going to get an update from the TGP Godfather himself, Glenn Wiley. And then finally, the week after that, September the 19th, is a service, a regular service with us, but we're going to have baptism, and I'm very excited about that. So be excited. There's a trivia question that will be in the newsletter this afternoon or tonight when it comes out later. So check that out if you're interested in the prize box. But let's jump into the sermon recap. Let's talk hospitality, angels, and Jesus. Genesis 18 shows Abraham entertaining angels unawares. That language is found in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 2, which says, "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares." In other words, the author of Hebrews says that there have been some people in the Bible, and perhaps even throughout history, since we have a command here, who have actually shown kindness and hospitality to strangers and found out later, perhaps in heaven, that those strangers who visited them were actually angels, divine angelic beings. This is pretty incredible, and I'd argue that it could still happen today. But in an Ask Pastor John about this very issue, Piper pointed to Matthew 25, verses 30 through 40 as a better, deeper motivation for hospitality-type deeds than the possibility of entertaining angels. He says that the fact that Jesus takes our acts of true generous service as rendered unto himself, that fact is what should motivate us toward hospitality. So even more than the possibility of serving angels, which is undoubtedly really cool, we should show generosity and hospitality in the fear of Christ and out of love for him and as a means of serving him. God is a giver at heart. It's who he is. It's what he does. And he is pleased when his people look like him in generosity and kindness. Okay, quickly let's talk covenants and meals. Genesis 18 shows a meal on the heels of a covenant announced in Genesis 15 and sealed in Genesis 17. So you go deeper into the story later in the story on the heels of a covenant ceremony at Sinai after they've come out of Egypt. That's when they received the Ten Commandments. And then in the beginning of Exodus 24, Moses makes the covenant with them and sprinkles the blood on them and on the book as they commit to follow Yahweh. So on the heels of all of that at Sinai, there's a meal that the chief men eat. Exodus 24:11 shows those elders of Israel beholding God and dining in his presence. as part of the commandments or the covenant that Moses would receive from Yahweh's own hand. Also, the people themselves were to observe an ongoing meal every year as a sign of their continued commitment to him and to his covenant and thankfulness for his deliverance of them. It's called the Passover. And it's actually also spoken of after the renewal of the covenant in Exodus 34, following the worship of the golden calf. Then in an inauguration of the new covenant, Jesus tells his disciples at the Passover meal that this meal will now represent and signify that new covenant. He says in Luke 23:20, "This is the new covenant in my blood." So there's an ongoing meal that signifies the new covenant and the peace and friendship that comes as a result of the making of this covenant. And finally, at the culmination of history, and when the new covenant realizes its chief goal, the people of God will dine with Christ our King at the marriage supper of the Lamb. Marriage, by the way, is nothing if not a covenant. And we generally have a meal or some form of celebration, including food, after those as well. So there's a connection here between covenants and meals shared by the participants in the covenants. There's friendship and peace around this table. Let's chat about the omnipotence of God for a minute. This is apparently a core truth about God that he desires for us to believe. He wants it to get into our bones and to change the way we live and pray. It's not a call to self-confidence or self-esteem, but confidence in God and his omnipotence. It's repeated in different ways at different places, but the truth is the same and is fundamental to our faith. In Luke 1, Gabriel is speaking to Mary about the fact that as a virgin, she will have a child. And this angel points to Elizabeth. He calls her who was called barren, as further evidence of God's divine ability to do anything that pleases him. He says, "And behold, your relative Elizabeth," that's how you know I do it one take. I don't cut that stuff out. "And behold, your relative Elizabeth in her old age has also conceived a son. And this is the sixth month with her who was called barren. For nothing will be impossible with God." Luke 1, 36 and 37. Later, Jesus speaks to the crowd after his interaction with the one that we call the rich young ruler. And he mentions how hard it is for a rich person to enter God's kingdom. This astonishes the crowd because they possess a cultural assumption that wealth is a nearly infallible indicator of God's pleasure and of that person's standing within God's kingdom. They respond with seeming amazement and exasperation, "Well, who then can be saved?" And Jesus responds with our truth, worded a little differently. "With man, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible." And even Paul in prison, as he reflects back on his life and how he can be content in Christ, no matter his circumstances, right? In plenty or want, in hunger and need, or when he's satisfied, right? He's content in Christ. And what he's doing is he's hanging his hat on this very same truth. "I can do all things through him who strengthens me." Clearly, this truth is to be considered precious to God's people. Let's live, pray, and act as if we truly believe this truth at the center of our beings. Ask God to let it shape everything about you. Finally, I want to talk about Piper and God's promises. Part of this discussion, our discussion over the last several weeks about faith and God's promises, needs to be addressed, and it's this. Which promises should I claim for myself and use for myself in my life, and how do they apply to me? So I've included some links in the newsletter that I obviously just can't tell you. You can't type them in as you listen to this. I mean, I guess you could, but we're not going to do it that way. You can just go and find it in the newsletter. So the links there are helpful as we think about being called to believe God's promises. Now, we have to be careful that we don't misapply the promises to ourselves and assume that they mean the exact same things for us as they did for Israel or the persons to whom they were made. So, for example, a barren, aging couple might read God's words to Abraham and then expect him to give them children because God promised Abraham a son, and to say, well, God's going to make a great nation out of us because he promised it to Abraham, and we can believe God's, I'm claiming that promise for myself, right? So God promised Abraham a son and then did it. And I feel like that means that he's promised me a son, and is going to do that. And certainly God could do that, but we have to dig deeper for personal application of those promises. Now, on the other hand, we don't want to assume that God's promises aren't for us or have nothing to say to us simply because they are in the Old Testament. So I'm grateful for John Piper's responses to these questions, and I'd encourage you to go listen to them or read them. He does one on, it's called John Piper's Most Used Promises, and then there's one that says which Old Testament promises apply to me. So go listen to those, check those out, read them, and figure out how those can be synthesized in your own believing life. But I pray that you have a great week. I love you, people.